This is Audible.
JT and Me, a Western short, written by J.C. Hulsey, narrated by J.C. Hulsey. John Turner Russell is a cantankerous old coot, but he's as loyal as a puppy dog. A man couldn't ask for a better partner or friend, for that matter. He and I served in the same unit in the cavalry. I was an officer, and he was a sergeant. Somehow, even back then, rank didn't matter to either one of us. We became friends. Close friends, you might say. After we were discharged, JT and I traveled together trying to find out what our niche in life was going to be. We were both tired of fighting and taking orders. We signed on with more than one cattle ranch, even tried a horse ranch. We sure didn't cotton to falling behind them old mossy-backed cows all day. The grub in most places was a lot better than army chow, except at a couple of places. Neither one of us figured we was cut out to follow behind a plow, so it seemed we were back to square one in the job hunting. We were in a little place called Calico Junction when I literally ran into someone from my military days. He had been a colonel and our commanding officer for the entire time we served. "With a name like mine," he said, "I had no choice but to go into politics. I'm now a territorial judge for the entire Republic of Texas." excuse me. It ain't a republic no more. "Anyhow, I am now Judge Hiram T. Justice, based in Newton County, and I could use a couple of good, reliable men to work for me." After a long, very long discussion, JT and I decided to give it a try. Our job, as it was described by the judge, was to look into the backgrounds of certain individuals and ascertain if they had the potential of becoming lawbreakers. There was very little, if any, violence involved in this endeavor. That is, until these last jobs. It seemed as if the jobs were becoming more like bounty hunting than investigating. JT is tall and wide-shouldered, a handsome figure of a man, and the ladies readily pursue him. On more than one occasion, I've had to hunt him down whenever we would get a job. I found him in some places a couple of times where he shouldn't have been. He always claimed he couldn't be blamed if the woman that wanted him was married. Cora Winchell is one of the finest women I've ever met, and she would make a good wife. JT and I have been special investigators for the judge close to 5 years. There's a lot of traveling involved, and that's one of the reasons I'm not ready to settle down. Cora doesn't seem to understand my reasoning about this. She said she wasn't going to wait much longer for me to pop the question, and that was something I wasn't looking forward to. I really can't blame her. We've been seeing each other now on to 6 months. Every time she gets me cornered, something comes up. My job as a special investigator isn't a job where you can sit behind a desk. You have to travel wherever the culprits go and bring them back, alive, if they let you. She wasn't none too happy about another delay in her wedding plans, but it's like I told her. Duty calls, and I have to answer. I found JT at Mrs. Reynolds' house, drinking coffee and enjoying the slight breeze on the front porch. How'd I know to look there, you might ask? Well, Mr. Reynolds is out of town for a few days. Need I say more? JT said his goodbyes, and we headed for the livery stable. The slender livery stable owner was a cantankerous old man with wrinkles on top of wrinkles. He always had an opinion about anything and everything. He claimed he was 94 years old, and nobody doubted it. He always had a story about every situation. His bushy beard shook as he bobbed his head for emphasis. He spotted us walking across the street headed in his direction. Oliver Watkins, the hustler, pulled a plug of tobacco out of his shirt pocket, bit off a chunk, and put the rest back in his pocket. He didn't chew but a couple of times before he spit out the door.
"Howdy, J.T. Wes?"
He nodded his head.
"You fellers gonna be needin' your horses, I reckon."
He spit again onto the stable floor.
"I heard about the telegram you got from the judge."
"Ain't there nothing private in this town?" fussed J.T.
"You know how it is in a small town," said Watkins. "This ain't normally what you fellers do, is it?"
"Just get our horses, please, Ollie," I said calmly. "We need to get on the road."
"Sure thing, Wes. Just be a minute."
He disappeared toward the back of the building.
"That old skinflint knows all there is to know about everybody and everything in this town,"
J.T. said, removing his hat. He scratched his head, then placed the hat back on his head.
"Here they go. ready to go, said Ollie. I even made sure your canteens are full, in case you get thirsty.
Thanks, Ollie. Say, have you seen Tyler Chambers and Ned Barlow? I asked.
Sure. They came in together first thing this morning and headed straight to their hangout, he said. You know where that is, don't you?
Now, that's something everybody knows, J.T. laughed. Hold the horses till we get back, I told him. Come on, J.T.
We crossed the street and walked the two blocks to the Scalded Dog Saloon, a favorite place for out-of-work or lazy cowpunchers.
What do you need them two low-down good-for-nothings for? Asked J.T.
I figure the more bodies we have, I explained, the easier it might be to talk the gang members into surrendering.
That's a good plan, except for one thing, said J.T.
What's that?
If the bad guys decide to fight instead of surrendering, then you not only got to watch out getting shot by them, but there ain't no telling which direction your two cowboys is going to shoot.
Well, let's hope they decide to take the easy way out and surrender.
You always do think positive, don't you?
We found the two men we were looking for bellied up to the bar, nursing a couple of warm beers. Tyler Chambers, a large man with a pot belly and a flushed red complexion, and Ned Barlow, who had small features and a peach fuzz mustache, a kid trying really hard to be a man. They were both fair shots when sober, which wasn't all that often, but they were the best candidates at the time. No, I can't say the best. Let's say the only candidates. I hope Chambers could last a day without a bottle. The problem with Barlow was he was a nervous sort. If he didn't shoot himself in the foot trying to get his gun out, it'd be a miracle. The only reason I even considered them was for show. If the bandits saw more guns than me and J.T., they might think twice about fighting back. We walked inside and straight up to the bar. J.T. on one side, me on the other. Chambers, being sort of the leader of the two, looked first at J.T., then at me.
Okay, he said. What do you want?
I've got a job for you and Ned, I told him, if you're interested.
What kind of job? He asked. You two ain't ranchers or farmers, unless you're doing something I ain't heard about.
No, we're not ranchers or farmers, I said. We're still special investigators for the judge, and we need some help in chasing down and apprehending a gang of bank robbers.
You talking about Virgil Durham and his men?
That's them, I said. We really need you, just as a backup, really. They'll see the four of us and more than likely give up without a shot being fired.
I don't know. Them fellows usually shoot first and ask questions later, he said, then looked at his partner. What do you think, Ned?
Ned looked around Chambers and asked, How much this job pay? I think that ought to be the most important thing about it.
It pays regular investigator wages, $5 a day. How about it, fellas? You in?
Come on, Ty. We ain't got nothing better to do, and besides, I'm down to my last two bits.
I don't know, said Chambers. Like I said, if them boys start shooting, one of us might get killed.
Hell, we could get killed falling off our horse, argued Ned. Come on. I'm going with them.
Oh, all right, said Chambers. But if I get killed, I ain't never going to forgive you.
I'm in.
Come on, boys, I said, patting each of them on the back. Let's get our horses and hunt some outlaws.
We followed behind our two brand-new special investigators.
I sure hope you know what you're doing, J.T. said. You might just have a double helping of trouble before this is over.
It's going to be all right. Just wait, I told him. You'll see.
There you go with that positive thinking again.
When we reached the livery stable, Ollie was waiting outside with our horses, the horses of Ned and Tyler.
I got them all ready just in case, he said. I see you talked them into going. I sure do wish you lots of luck, because you're going to need it.
He looked at our new helpers, turned his eyes upward, and shook his head, then turned away, still shaking his head.
Let's mount up, I said, and head for the Kendall Mountain Range.
J.T. and I are both very good with a six-shooter, but I'm good not only with my .45, but I'm an excellent sharpshooter with my weapon of choice, a Henry rifle. The Henry's a 16-shot, .44 caliber, rimfire, lever-action, breech-loading rifle, and in my humble opinion,
the best rifle ever made. JT said, I sure hope them outlaws run all the way to Mexico. I ain't too fond of tangling with Virgil Durham. They say he sent more than 9 souls to meet their maker. You can always stay behind, grinning, knowing what he's going to say. Yeah, I stay here and you get yourself killed, then what would I do without you? We'd already checked in with the banker, and he told us what the robbers looked like and the descriptions of their horses. He also told us they headed west toward the Kendall Mountain Range. Why you think they went that away? Asked JT. When you're on the run, one way's as good as another. What are we going to do if they double back on us? I reckon we'll just follow the tracks whichever way they go. It was already 4 o'clock. We wouldn't reach our destination until morning. We rode our horses hard, which I didn't like to do, but the sooner we catch these hombres, the sooner we can get back to town. We arrived at the foot of the Kendall Mountains around dawn. The sun was just starting to peak over the tip of the mountain. What do you want to do now? Asked JT. Ride on up the trail, or you want to look around for tracks? But let's take a breather and let the horses rest for a couple of minutes, as I dismounted. They need it after that ride we put them through. I'll look around and see if y'all can spot any tracks. Ned, you and Tyler dismount, I told them. Best don't do a lot of wandering around until I spot some tracks. They both climbed off their horses and stretched, then both grabbed their canteens for a drink of water. JT, being the veteran that he was, got off his horse, took the canteen, poured a little bit into his hat, and gave it to his horse. He did the same with my animal. He put the hat back on his head. I could tell he was enjoying the feel of the water running down his head. It was a warm day. I stopped looking for tracks after I found the men had headed up the side of the mountain. I leaned with my hands across the saddle and said, I'm dreading this a little bit, but dreading it don't get rid of the problem. Let's ride. It might be warm here at the foot of the mountain, but the closer to the top we got was going to be cold. JT and I had brought heavy coats, but that still didn't help your face none. JT had already taken his from behind the saddle while we were letting our horses rest. He saw me watching him and said to me, Go ahead and look. These old bones of mine maybe gets colder a little faster than yours. I didn't say nothing, I told him. You might not have used your voice to convey your message, he fussed, but I know when you're thinking something. You boys bring your heavy coats? He asked Ned and Tyler. I didn't comment. I just turned and faced straight ahead, which isn't a good idea when you're tracking fugitives. They could be anywhere along the trail waiting to shoot us out of the saddle. JT grunted and patted me on the shoulder. Here, he said, and handed me a piece of jerky. Thanks, I told him, and bit off a small piece. The thing about jerky is it's good and nourishing, but it is extremely hard to chew. I wallowed the piece around in my mouth, trying to get it soft enough to chew.
How about giving us some of that? Asked Chambers.
Here, JT tossed a piece to Chambers, who almost fell out of his saddle catching it. He twisted it in half and gave the smaller piece to Ned. I reached back, untied my coat, put it on, and shivered a bit. I thought you wasn't going to put it on yet, teased JT. I didn't answer. I just started buttoning it up. It did feel good, but even that heavy coat didn't keep my nose from the cold. Ned and Tyler had already put theirs on when JT did. How far ahead do you think they are? Asked JT. Well, the banker said they hightailed it out of town around noon. We got on the trail around 4 o'clock, so I figured they probably rode their horses as hard as we did. If they didn't push that hard, then we could run up on them at any time. If they did push them hard, they'll go over the top and be halfway down the other side before we get to the top. We kept climbing up as fast as the horses could manage for about an hour and was getting close to the top. I reached up to scratch my stubble chin when a shot ricocheted off a rock, splattering splinters in my face. JT and I both left the saddles and scrambled behind a large boulder. When I looked, I saw that Ned and Tyler had sense enough to scramble behind a rock on the other side of the trail. We were in a bad situation, and I didn't see an easy way out. I'm too damned old to be playing hide-and-seek with bullets, said JT. What was I doing getting myself into this awkward situation? Why didn't I listen to Cora and quit? When was it? Only yesterday is when she gave me the ultimatum. Choose either me or what you've been doing all these years. It's mighty hard for a man to choose, I told her, as I fastened my gun belt around my waist. I've been doing it for a very long time. Do I love her enough to turn my life around? Right now, squatting behind this rock, it's not a hard choice at all. Better quit daydreaming, though, and try to figure a way out of this. "They ain't been but one shot," J.T. commented. "You reckon they took a shot to slow us down and went on?"
"Could be. You want to step out and be a target for 'em?" I asked him.
"Hey, I'm just a helper on this here job. If anybody had to take a risk, it ain't going to be me. You could ask the new guys over there."
He nodded toward Ned and Tyler.
They were hunkered down so low I could barely make out where they were.
"I reckon, since, as you put it, the leader, I better do it myself."
"Okay, hand me that stick by your foot."
He handed it to me. I put my brand new hat on it and raised it up above the rock. Nothing. I raised up slowly and peered over it. I didn't see anything.
"I think you might be right," I told him. "They took a shot to slow us down."
"Well, it worked," said J.T. glumly. "Let's get after them yahoos."
The horses had scattered a little away from us when we left them so quickly, but they were good animals and didn't wander too far.
"Come on, special investigators," I called to Ned and Tyler. "Let's get our horses and go on."
"I ain't so sure about this here trip," fussed Chambers. "I sure didn't expect to get shot at so doggone quick."
"Didn't hit you, did it?"
questioned Ned.
"Come on, let's get the horses and catch them guys. The sooner we do that, the sooner we can get back to town."
We rounded up the horses, mounted up, and J.T. led off. It's amazing to me that after that slug sent splinters of rock in my face, how warm it feels right now. I know I can't remove the coat. It won't take but a little while till I'll be freezing again.
We kept moving uphill as fast as the horses would go. J.T. was complaining.
"Sure be glad when we reach the top, so's my back'll be pushing instead of pulling on me. This uphill is hell on these old bones."
"It ain't no better on me," complained Chambers.
"You fellers ain't but a couple of crybabies," commented Ned. "Besides, we're almost to the top. Look up yonder. You can see it."
"Bless God for small blessings," said J.T. We reached the crest in a short time, a little further than we thought by looking.
"Let's take a short breather," I told them, dismounting from my horse. They all followed suit.
"Look a yonder," exclaimed J.T.
"There they are, about halfway down the mountain."
"You reckon they're too far for your Henry?"
he asked.
"It might throw a scare into them, even if they are too far away, just to hear the report of the shot."
I removed my weapon from the boot, laid it across the saddle to steady it, pulled the hammer back, sighted high, then slowly squeezed the trigger. It did scare them, exactly like J.T. thought. They all jumped from their saddles, scurrying for cover.
"Go ahead," said J.T. "Take another to let 'em know we're coming after 'em."
I squeezed off another round, then put my Henry back in the boot.
"Let's mount up and go get 'em," hollered Ned.
It only took a moment for us to be headed down the same trail that the culprits were on, since there was only one trail. By the time we were headed down, they had already gotten back on their horses and were pushing their mounts pretty hard. I saw their horses stumble more than once.
"If they keep going at that pace, we're going to catch them even sooner, because they're going to kill them animals," said J.T.
"Since when have you ever known a man being chased using good sense?" I said to him.
"Yeah, I reckon you're right, again."
The gang had made it almost to the bottom when their lead horse took a tumble, throwing the rider over its head. He hit the ground hard and didn't get up, neither did the horse. The trail was too narrow for the others to ride around, so they dismounted and sought cover, getting ready for us.
"Hold up a minute," I said loudly, removing my coat and stowing it behind my saddle.
"Leave 'em be and let the situation simmer for a bit. Then maybe they'll be willing to talk."
"We can't wait too long. Look at that," J.T. said as he removed his coat. "One of 'em's trying to rope the dead horse. He's going to pull it to the side so's they can get by."
"Give 'em another taste of your Henry," said J.T. "That'll slow 'em down." I repeated what I had done earlier, causing them to take cover. "When they figure we're out of range, they'll get on with moving that animal." Sure enough, in a couple of minutes, they were all tying their ropes to the dead horse and had it pulled to the side. They climbed back on and started down the incline.
"Too bad we wasn't a tad closer," said J.T. "You could have nailed one or two of them scoundrels."
"We'll get 'em," I said. "Let's go." By now, they had hit level ground and lit out like their horses' tails were on fire. We needed to hurry, but I didn't want one of us joining the dead man on the trail. By the time we reached level ground, they were already out of sight. I stopped my horse and shouted.
"Hold up. They're getting away," grumbled Ned.
"There ain't but one small settlement in the direction they're heading," I told him, "and I just happen to know a shortcut."
"Not through there," groaned J.T.
"You know it's the quickest way to catch 'em," I told him.
"I reckon you're right, again,"
removing his hat and running his head through his hair, then replacing his hat.
"How come J.T.'s so fussy about the way you're talking about?" asked Ned.
I'm not really fussing, Blaine J.T. It's just that I got some bad memories from that place. If that's the way Wes wants to go, then that's the way we're going to go. Come on, I'll lead the way. I fell in behind J.T. The other two came up behind me. We traveled about 100 yards from the trail and then turned up through a brushy area. Pushing the brushes aside, concealed from the trail above or below was a small path, only wide enough for one horse. The others had to follow single file. The path looked well-worn, as if it was being used constantly. As we drew close to the place that J.T. was talking about, he pulled up on the reins and hollered, "Whoa, Wes, I don't think I can do it. You're going to have to lead the way." "Will one of you explain what's going on?" an agitated Ned asked loudly. "It was just a couple of more feet where it happened," I explained to him. "What happened? Tell me already." He seemed to be getting very upset. "J.T. was bit by a rattlesnake," I told him. "It weren't no ordinary rattlesnake neither," J.T. said. "It was straight from the pits of hell. Who ever heard of a rattlesnake jumping out of a tree and latching onto a feller's leg?"
"Snakes can't climb trees. Everybody knows that," Tyler piped up.
"This 'un did. That tree yonder, standing all alone by the side of the trail."
"You sure it was a rattlesnake?"
"You can bet your boots, I'm sure. Almost died from the poison. If Wes hadn't acted fast about sucking the poison out, I wouldn't be here today."
"How you figure he's up in that tree?" Ned asked.
"All I know is he jumped out of that tree yonder." J.T. pointed to the tree. "He grabbed hold of my leg, sunk his fangs in so deep they broke off when I jerked him loose and throwed him on the ground."
"We need to get moving," I interrupted the conversation about snakes. "I don't see no snakes in there today, so come on."
"Seems to me you're a very lucky man, J.T., said Ned. "Lucky to have a friend like Wesley Champion," he said. "Best friend a man could have. Saved my life more than once."
We rode past the tree that J.T. was so afraid of, without incident, and continued following the small trail. This trail cut a considerable amount of time and miles from the regular route. After about an hour riding, we spotted the settlement off in the distance.
"Is that it?"
questioned Ned. "That's it," I answered. "And we should be about an hour ahead of them. Let's head on down there and give them a surprise." I turned my horse downhill. Now that we were off the mountains, the temperature changed drastically. The sun was now like a ball of fire beating down on us. All four of us beginning to show signs from the heat. Our shirts became wet, and more than once, we had to wipe the wetness from our faces. I was eager to be finished with this job and not really sure if I wanted another one like this one. Maybe Cora's right. Maybe I should marry her and settle down. But what would I do to make a living? All I've ever known my entire life is using the gun. Maybe I could find a small town someplace and be a peace officer. I could even talk to the judge and explain to him that I'm getting tired of all this traveling and gunplay. Perhaps he might have something that I could do without all the excitement. I reckon it's worth asking him after we finish this little job. But what's going to happen to J.T. if I get married? Sure can't have him living in the same house with us. You know, I've known him a lot longer than I've known Cora. In a lot of ways, we're closer than Cora and me. I can tell him things that I wouldn't even consider telling her. I know this probably sounds all mushy, but I don't want to lose his friendship. Not ever. We've crossed too many rivers together just to call it quits. Well, I'll worry about that when the time comes. We rode into the little settlement as the sun was almost directly above. How they could even call this a settlement is beyond me. There's only a combination saloon general store, a combination livery stable blacksmith shop, and a couple other buildings that had no markings on them. All the buildings, in my opinion, were dilapidated and ready to collapse at the slightest breeze. Ned, you and Tyler go over behind the blacksmiths, one on one side and one on the other, I ordered. J.T., you find a way to get on top of the saloon with your carbine.
Where you going to be? Asked J.T.
I'm going to be standing right in the middle of the street with my Henry cocked and ready.
If they don't want to give up, you'll be a sitting duck out in the middle like that.
That's where you and your carbine comes in. The first one even blinks. You knock him out of the saddle. You didn't tell Chambers and Barlow when they're supposed to fire. If the shooting gets too heated, I'm expecting that common sense will kick in and they'll figure it out. You're sure putting a lot of faith in a couple of idiots. They'll be all right. You get up on top of that building. They'll be showing up any minute now. Watch each man very close. He took off toward the saloon, cutting between the buildings. In a few minutes, I saw him wave from the roof. It seemed as if the temperature just went up a few more degrees.
As hard as the trip over the mountain was, I wouldn't mind some of that cold right about now. I stood there in the middle of the street, a perfect target to anyone who might decide to ride in with guns blazing. I uttered a brief prayer for God to watch over me. I asked Him to forgive me for all my sins, and if He needed me more than my loved ones here on this earth, then please make it quick and painless. There they are, riding slow and easy as if they don't have a care in the world. Virgil was on the lead horse with Lefty and Shane to his right. On his right was Benjamin Bright, the meanest one of the gang. He'd be the one to watch out for, not only ugly, but quick-tempered. He had a reputation of shooting a man for belching. They rode up about 10 feet from me and stopped. Their hands were empty, but each one was ready to draw and start shooting at any time. "Hello, champion," Virgil said so quiet I had to strain to hear. "Virgil," I said, looking directly at him, but keeping my eyes on Bright.
"What you doing here?"
asked Virgil.
"That's a little off your beaten path, ain't it?"
"We're waiting for you," I told him.
"Why are you waiting for us? We ain't done nothing wrong. Besides, you said we. All I see is you."
"There's plenty enough guns covering you that you don't stand a chance of getting out alive," I told him, waving my left hand around the building, "if you make the wrong choice."
"He's bluffing," Wright said, anxious to get on with it.
"You think if I didn't have enough guns to blast every one of you out of the saddle that I would be standing here in the middle of the street by myself? If I was you, I'd give up, especially if you only live to see tomorrow." I noticed a twitch in Bright's right eye before his hand touched the handle of his six-shooter. He was pushed over the back of his horse from the impact of the slug from the Henry. I immediately fell to the ground and rolled to my left. I watched as Virgil hit the dirt, his face turned toward me, not far from where I was laying, his blank eyes staring at me, yet not seeing anything. Lefty and Shane hollered as they put their hands in the air. "Don't shoot! We give up!" Ned and Tyler came running up. "We got 'em! We got 'em all!" Ned said excitedly. I stood covering the two outlaws with the Henry. "Ned, you and Tyler keep these boys covered. J.T. should have come down by now." "J.T.," I called. "J.T.," I called again, heading for the rear of the saloon. I spotted a ladder leaning against the building. I scurried up to the roof, stepped off the ladder, and saw him. He was leaning against the facade of the building. He was holding his gut with both hands, blood leaking onto the plank roof. He looked at me as I quickly closed the distance between us.
"He got me good, Wes. Got me in the gut. You know what that means. I could go any minute. But not likely. It's burning bad. Don't hurt none, but it sure is burning. Can't take a deep breath. We had us a good run, didn't we?"
"Yes, we had a fine run. I wouldn't have wanted anybody else for my partner or my friend. You're mighty special to me. I wish it was me instead of you."
"What are you talking about? You got to get married and take care of Cora. I was sure counting on being your best man. Do something for me, will you?"
"Anything, J.T., anything.
Stop this kind of business before it's too late. Get some kind of job where you can spend time making a passel of little ones, and name one of them after me. Hold my hand, will you, Wes? I'm feeling mighty lonesome now.
I'm right here with you, partner. I'm not going any place.
Oh, dear Lord, it burns so much. You think it's too late for me to ask God to let me in?
It's never too late. Just ask Him. He's always waiting to hear from us."
J.T. asked for God's forgiveness that day, the last few seconds of his life. I believe God heard him and received him into His kingdom. John Turner Russell left this world only seconds after that prayer. It's almost like God let him live long enough for him to ask forgiveness. I stood, wiping tears from my eyes, looked one last time at my friend, then went down the ladder. I'd return later with a wagon. I wouldn't carry him across the saddle like a piece of meat. I walked to where Ned and Tyler were still holding their guns on the outlaws. "Let's get 'em in the saddle and head back," I said.
"What about J.T.?"
Ned asked.
"I'll be coming back for him later. Come on, fellas. Let's move out."
We got mounted and headed back home. Home wasn't going to be such a happy place for a while because my friend wasn't there. Not much was said all the way back. I guess Lefty and Shane was thinking about their future. Ned and Tyler were probably thankful it was J.T. instead of one of them. I was reliving all the memories of me and J.T. I would be remembering for the rest of my life.
I quit my job as an investigator, married Cora, started a feed store with the help of the judge. Our first two children were girls. I couldn't talk Cora into naming either one of them JT. But when the third child turned out to be a boy, there was no way on God's green earth that he was going to be named anything but John Turner in tribute to my friend. I could hardly wait until my little JT got old enough for me to tell him about JT and me. This has been JT and Me, a Western Short by J.C. Hulsey. Copyright 2015 by J.C. Hulsey. Audio copyright 2015 by Outlaws Publishing.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.